Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with a bipartisan revolt in the House of Representatives against President Obama's Trans-Pacific Partnership trade agreement following the leak of a draft text of a chapter on intellectual property rights published by WikiLeaks. Lori Wallach, the founder and director of Global Trade Watch, a division of Public Citizen, joins us to discuss Tea Party and progressive opposition to the president's fast-track authority, which could torpedo the deal. Then we'll examine the endemic political corruption in the Philippines that is hampering relief efforts, while the very politicians from the ruling families who have looted the country for decades are appearing on TV defending aid response. Michael Bula, a professor of political science at Northern Illinois University, who does political risk evaluations in the Philippines, joins us to discuss what is likely to happen to the aid that is pouring in from international donors, assuming it reaches those in need because of damage to the already neglected infrastructure. Then finally, we will speak with the anti-corporatist activist, the Reverend Billy, who is facing a battery of charges and jail time for a 15-minute musical protest he and his gospel choir staged at a mock religious revival at a Chase Bank in New York City last month. They were wearing toad hats to commemorate the golden toad forced into extinction by climate change and the $2.17 billion with which Chase has financed coal companies involved in mountaintop removal. And joining us now is Lori Wallach, the founder and director of Global Trade Watch, a division of the nonprofit watchdog group Public Citizen. She is an expert on the operations and outcomes of trade policies such as NAFTA, WTO, CAFTA, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. She works closely with Congress, scholars, and activists in the U.S. and developing countries to foster the growing debate about the implications of different models of globalization on jobs, offshoring, wages, the environment, public health, and food safety, equality, and social justice, and democratically accountable governance. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lori Wallach.
Thank you.
And, Lori, this leak from WikiLeaks of a chapter of a draft on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, of course, comes just a week before the international negotiators are to meet in Salt Lake City. And it also comes on the same day that a group of Democrats sent a letter to the president, and now a group of Republicans have sent a letter to the president. And you've been on the Hill today. I understand people are pretty riled up. Is that true?
It is true. Mainly because this Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, which actually was started under Bush in 2008, has been under negotiation in incredible secrecy. There are 600 U.S. official corporate advisors, but until this summer, Congress, which has the constitutional authority over trade, was not able to see the text, and it's still not available for the public or the press. There are 29 chapters, but only five of them actually have to do with trade. The other 24, like this intellectual property chapter that leaked today, would set policies that we think of as being decided by us in Congress and city councils that we'd have to conform all of our domestic laws to. And basically, a lot of it is backdoor legislating of things that could not get through Congress or the other countries' parliaments. So today's chapter, patent extensions that would raise medicine prices, limits on internet freedom, including chunks of SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, that literally was tanked in Congress just last year.
So what is motivating this unusual coalition of hardline Tea Partiers and progressives? Is it because of the Congress is being cut out of the loop? Is it just sort of a turf battle, or are they genuinely outraged?
I think there are three things that have come together as the perfect storm. One thing certainly is the way that the administration has handled Congress, has cut Congress out of this process, which delves so deeply into their business. So the chapters would set things on, for instance, government procurement, whether we can have labor conditions or environmental conditions or Buy American policy would even be banned. It has rules about immigration visas, about food safety policies. We'd have to import meat that doesn't meet our standards. And it has a set of rules that would give foreign companies better treatment in the United States and submit the U.S. to foreign tribunals where foreign companies could collect U.S. taxpayer dollars for having to meet our laws. So all this content in Congress has been cut out in a way that hasn't been the case, as secretive as past agreements have been for past agreements. I mean, Bush put on government websites the draft of the last big agreement like this, the Free Trade Area of the Americas. The second thing that's going on is not so much, I would say, a turf battle as a perennial structural fight. So trade in the U.S. has a very sort of interesting history. Congress has exclusive constitutional authority over trade. And I call that an effect of the Tea Party hangover, and I'm talking about the Boston Tea Party. Because in that instance, the king, literally, put up unilateral tariffs on tea and other stuff. And when the founders, after the Revolution, wrote the Constitution, they put control of trade in the more diffuse body, the Congress. So this big fight today, the letters were about a Nixon-era, really power-grab procedure. It's rarely used, called fast track. And it delegates away Congress's authority over trade, but it also delegates away really a lot of legislating authority. It allows the executive branch to sort of diplomatically legislate on all that stuff that I was talking about that's Congress's, but doing it through the negotiations. And then the third thing is the contents of the actual agreement. So of those 24 non-trade chapters, there are things that really have angered Democrats and Republicans alike. And those include some of these issues about internet freedom. As you'll recall, some of the libertarian groups, the most conservative members of Congress, were against SOPA, as were progressives. Another thing that's in there that makes the left and the right crazy is those international tribunals, the notion the U.S. government could get sued by foreign corporations and foreign tribunals and have our treasury raided. So those three things have been brewing, and I think it came to a head now because the administration is rushing into trying to finish the TPP, trying to get Congress to give away its authority with fast track. And it was sort of that BASTA moment where on both sides of the aisle, Congress said, not so fast.
Again, I'm speaking with Lori Wallach, the founder and director of Global Trade Watch, a division of the nonprofit watchdog group Public Citizen. She's an expert on the operations and outcomes of trade policy such as NAFTA, WTO, CAFTA, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Details of which, a chapter of which on intellectual property was leaked by WikiLeaks. We spoke some time back when there was the first leak, and I guess what's different with this leak is that the other partners in this partnership are the ones that their input has been revealed, and this includes New Zealand, Singapore, Canada, Chile, and Malaysia, Australia. What else?
Brunei, Mexico, Vietnam,
Chile. Yeah, and that's about it. But what I find conspicuously absent there, of course, is China, and that's my understanding of what this pact in many ways is about. Isn't this about the pivot to Asia, which is a cover, if you will, for containing China?
Well, I think probably from the State Department's perspective, the idea would be to, well, actually, former Secretary of State Clinton said this, would be to project U.S. power through this international commercial instrument into China's backyard. Now, interestingly for the other countries, New Zealand, Australia, etc., they have much closer relationships with China. And for them, the governments have said, if this is anti-China, we can't be part of it. So that's sort of playing on two levels. Also, the previous U.S. trade ambassador, the top trade guy, the U.S. trade representative last year, said nothing would make him happier than if China joined the TPP, which is kind of perverse if this is supposed to be ring-fencing China. That said, I also think that part of what TPP is really about is a corporate push that we've seen pop up different ways to implement internationally and lock in rules that favor them that are hard to get through normal democratic processes. It's sort of like that shell game at the carnival. The negotiations happen under different names. So folks will remember there was a big push that started in 2001 to expand the World Trade Organization's scope and power. Actually, it started in 99. That was what the big Seattle protests were against. Well, in that context, a lot of big developing countries said, no, we're actually not going to expand drug patents and increase prices. No, we're not going to roll back financial regulation. And so that got stuck. In the meantime, at a different point, there was an attempt to do this kind of agreement with a bunch of Latin American countries. And Brazil and Argentina and Jamaica and other countries ultimately put the kibosh on that. This is sort of the latest version. And it gets talked about as writing the rules for the 21st century. But whose rules? Those 600 corporate trade advisors. I mean, literally, the agreement is packed with stuff that has explicitly been rejected in the democratic policymaking procedures of lots of the countries. So the companies get together, they talk to these negotiators, the discussions are behind closed doors, and once an agreement is signed, it gets voted yes or no, and then once it's in place, no changes can be made unless every country agrees. So it's like cementing, super gluing into place these very retrograde policies.
Well, but I believe that you think this is could be the end of the TPP. I mean, in many ways, we have a president who's under siege with these two signature achievements, one of which is healthcare reform, which is floundering because of the launch via a faulty website of so-called Obamacare. And this TPP, which I think he's also heavily invested in, how much do you think? Obviously, this is just the beginning of the growing outrage right today with these leaks. But this is not likely to go away. It's likely to escalate, isn't it?
It is, and it's been boiling in a lot of countries. The thing that you have to take into consideration with these so-called trade agreements, these corporate rule agreements, is unlike, say, healthcare, where companies are against parts of it, on this, all the corporate interests are united, from big pharma to the oil and gas companies to big content to the chronic job offshoring, used to be U.S. manufacturers, now they make it someplace else and sell it here. All of these different Wall Street, they're actually all united. And that makes these agreements have a tendency to be like zombies. Every time you think that they are boxed and buried, that coalition of corporate power ends up trying to revive them. So will the TPP be done anytime soon? Definitely not. Will it definitely get done? Oh, I wouldn't say necessarily. But is it down and out? Not yet. And the way, actually, that these agreements ultimately get derailed is when people start looking at the details and making a fuss. So, you know, for folks, the agreement is so broad, different parts of it are going to make you irritated, are going to make you scared, are going to make you worry about your future. And one place you can get the overview of the whole thing is a website called ExposeTheTPP.org, www.exposeTheTPP.org. You can literally pull up a fact sheet. What does it mean on GMO labeling? What does it mean for medicine prices? What does it mean for jobs and wages? Service sector jobs, manufacturing, climate and energy, all of those issues get implicated. And then if you want to really dig into the details, or for instance, look at a lot of analysis about today's leak, you can go to our website, tradewatch.org, and dig in deep. There's a whole fast-track section that explains about that procedure and what you can do to make sure your members of Congress don't give away their authority. And in California, interestingly, where I know you're based, there is a bipartisan majority of your House delegation who got on these letters, Republicans and Democrats alike, which is hopeful. Mm-hmm. But that also is a continuing fight.
Well, Laurie, I'm afraid we've run out of time, and I must say that just as a journalist, I'm extremely concerned about narrowing international standards for fair use, which allows journalists to use copyrighted information without paying royalties. That could kill journalism. So let's stay in touch, and I appreciate your information that you've given us here today.
Thank you very much. I've spent a lot of quality time with that leaked text today, and so maybe another time we can talk about the details, because there's all kinds of outrageous stuff. Folks, you could get knocked off of your internet provider and have mandatory fines for right. small-scale, non-commercial copying, like sending your mother a recipe. Not good.
Not good. Thank you so much, Laurie. Again, Laurie is the founder and director of Global Trade Watcher Division of the nonprofit watchdog group Public Citizen. She's an expert on the operations and outcomes of trade policy such as NAFTA, WTO, CAFTA, and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. She works closely with Congress, scholars, and activists in the U.S. in developing countries to foster the growing debate about implications of different models of globalization on jobs, offshoring, wages, the environment, public health and food safety, equality and social justice, and democratically accountable governance. We're going to take a brief station break and back talking about the endemic corruption in the Philippines.